In our study guide going into the New Testament this morning, looking at the Gospels, in this particular section, of course, we have the areas there want to focus on the birth, the ministry, and the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. Those are the key components at this particular point. Again, in other words, remember we're studying, we're focusing on, you know, a skeleton type of a thing, rather than trying to go through and, you know, and learn all of the different stories and, you know, the miracles and all of those things of the gospel accounts and so forth. To begin with, these three particular areas. Of course, the area of the ministry, we'll talk about that more in just a moment, is kind of a broad spectrum, but we'll narrow that down here in just a moment. But let's begin in talking about the birth of Jesus. And what I want to focus on here is, you know, when we look at these different components that we have in this particular section, the things that we want to focus on, why is the birth of Jesus significant to our study and kind of as part of this skeleton type of a thing? Why is the birth of Jesus so significant to that? Okay. 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 Well, those things are all true, but there's another really significant aspect of this. In other words, we have to ask the question, why did God, you know, have recorded for us by the gospel writers the information about concerning the birth of Jesus? Why is that so significant? Okay, all right. It is a fulfillment of the promise. Okay. Okay. Keep going though. there's another dramatically and drastically important aspect of this. Exactly. Because what it does is it focuses on the humanity of Jesus, the God-man, you see. And I think that's why God, you know, again, had the gospel writers include these narratives, you know, for us. Rather than just to have, you know, the prophecies that tell of, you know, that Jesus was going to come, the Messiah was going to come, and that he's our Redeemer and all of these things. Specifically, when you go through, and remember there's another important part of this that we've talked about before, and that has to do with the genealogies. And if you notice, if you go to Matthew and you go to Luke, that both of those Gospels spend an amount of time there giving those genealogies. Why is that so significant? And yet, now we're going to combine a couple of these answers that y'all gave here, because it does not only shows the humanity, but it shows the fulfillment of the prophecies through that lineage, and not just that the promise that God made to Abraham that, you know, he was going to send a Messiah, but specifically how was that to come about and through which family line and so forth. And so those genealogies go back and they show the significance of all of those things, you see, that Jesus was born of a woman. He was born of a virgin. That he came here, though, as a man, and he lived as a human being. When you connect these aspects of the Gospels with some of the things that the writer of Hebrews has to say later on, see, again, this is how we, you know, we make these kinds of connections. There are some significant statements the writer of Hebrews makes concerning the humanity of Jesus, doesn't he? Anybody recall what those are? Yeah, yet was without sin. He was a man just like us, you see. So one of the most significant aspects of Jesus in terms of this, you know, again, the skeleton that we're trying to put together here is his humanity. Okay? that we really need to be able to focus on that part of it and help people to understand the significance of that. If Jesus did not come here as a human being, and he was indeed a man, then much of what the Gospels have to say about Jesus becomes insignificant. It loses its power. You say, if you take the humanity away from Jesus, then much of what he did and who he was becomes very insignificant to us. Okay? Exactly. And that's why I was saying what I was saying is because, you see, and this is where we have a big problem today in religious circles today, in Christianity and the whole issue of Jesus and who he was and so forth, is Jesus' humanity, but yet at the same time being God, because when we really understand the significance of God coming here in human form, then it does take away a lot of our excuses. We have to see Jesus for who he really was and what he experienced while he was here, that he lived just like we did, just like we do, so that, you know, we can't look down upon Jesus and say, oh, well, the reason that he could do these things is because he was God. And that, in a lot of ways, lets us off the hook, doesn't it? You see? But when we understand Jesus in his true human form, and what Paul writes about him in Philippians, the fact that he, as Paul says in Philippians chapter 2, he did not consider equality with God something to be grasped or held on to. Some of your translations, the King James says, thought it not robbery. Something to be held on to. He emptied himself, he says. In other words, when Jesus came here through his birth as a baby, okay, he came here leaving his deity in heaven. And he came here just like you and I come into this world, as a human being. And as he grew up, and as he grew in this world, he went through a lot of the very same things that you and I go through in our lives. He experienced, in other words, humanity. The reason that aspect of it is so significant, if you think about it this way, throughout all of the religions of the world, okay, even in Roman and Greek mythology, and I don't know of every single one, so I'm going to make this broad statement, and if somebody knows of a different one than you, please let me know. But I am not aware of any other religion, okay, that has its God, say, experiencing humanity. Okay? I don't know of any other religion that has that kind of a thing. Colonel?
The closest you get is Hinduism, but in that instance, the gods come down as an avatar and they have supernatural powers.
Right. Right.
It's not
the same thing, and it's really not. It's close, but it's not really as close, because again, what you're seeing is, within Judeo-Christian, teachings, you have deity, the one God, not one of many gods, as in again Roman and Greek mythology, and you have Zeus and so forth, and they've had relations with humans, and they've got offspring that are half God, half human, and blah, 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 all those kinds of things. There is nothing like this kind of a teaching in all of the religious world, where you have the deity, the chief deity, okay, who becomes fully human. Okay? And that is tremendously significant. Okay? Because you have God who is saying to his creation, okay, he's coming here to experience what his creation experiences. Okay? And that aspect of the God that we have, to me, is just it's just awesome. It's unbelievably awesome. You say that God cares enough about His creation that He would become like us to experience what we experience. You say, and so when we look at and you consider the birth of Jesus, it's not just filler for the narrative. It's not just somewhere, you know, for the gospel writers to start with. You know, it's like, okay, where are we going to start this story? Okay, well, let's go and start with His birth here. You say, it's not filler like that. This is significant material, significant information to help us to understand not only how God's plan, you know, and His promises were fulfilled and how they came to be, but to show us the importance of God wanting to come here and to be like His creation, to experience what we experience, so that He would have that experience. He would know what it's like to be human. Okay? So when we talk about the birth of Jesus, we need to understand it in that kind of a way. The humanity of Jesus is perhaps one of the most significant aspects of who Jesus was and is for us in our lives. When people miss the humanity of Jesus, then they miss a major point of the whole gospel story and the whole story of redemption. You see, because if Jesus wasn't fully human, well, what does that do, for instance, to His death on the cross? Do what?
It diminishes it.
It not only diminishes it; it just basically kind of, you know, takes it out of the way. Yeah. You see?
The people that I've known that don't get the humanity of Christ, it makes God distant from them. It
absolutely
puts a distance. You know, they never really get the notion that Christ is their friend and He's had the common experience. You know, it really does.
Yeah.
You know, it puts God, much like the heathen world, He's this thing that's real far off.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can yell and scream and holler at Him and maybe, you know, He might hear me.
Right.
Instead of He's right here next to me.
Yeah. Well, what it does is it removes the whole aspect of a relationship, you know, out of that whole thing. Can a person really truly have a relationship with God? Absolutely. How does that happen? It happens
right
through the life of Jesus, the humanity of Jesus. You see, because that's our connection to Him in that way. Okay. Another aspect of that, when you think about, you know, there are those who look at Jesus and their belief and teaching concerning Jesus was that yes, He came here. He was human. He was born of a woman. He was human while He was here. But just before He died on the cross, you know, His spirit was, you know, taken. And so that really wasn't Jesus that died on the cross. You know, it wasn't God, in other words, His deity part of Him, you know, and so forth. And so again, we see all of this diminishes the significance of what Jesus accomplished, you know, for us. Chuck?
That's how I thought. I mean, one of the most powerful things was to learn that when He's already prayed three times, you know,
yeah,
He has to come from the
yeah.
He's struggled.
Yeah. And to know that our deity that we share with was, Jerry, what did you say before? He was tempted. The writer of Hebrews says, in every way, just as we are, yet was without sin. When I struggle with temptation in my life, to know that God, my Creator, knows what I'm feeling and what I'm experiencing as I'm struggling with temptation, you see, that brings that relationship brings it into a whole different dimension, doesn't it? Rather than, you know, looking at a God who is, as you said, Steve, is distant. He's up there somewhere, and does He really care about me and so forth? Well, you know, when I look at the aspect of it, the fact that He cared enough that He came here and became like us and died on the cross for our sins, yeah. How much more care do you want, do you see? How much more do you want to have a God who cares for you that would do that? See? Oh, yeah, yeah.
He is the one through whom, by whom everything,
everything was made. Yeah.
He wasn't just a God.
Right.
He was God.
He was God, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Russ, have you ever wondered that God in his plan, because in the very beginning, because we know so very little about Jesus from his birth to the time he really started preaching, why he didn't say, miraculously a man appeared in Jerusalem and professes to be the Son of God and then go about Jesus' ministry. Had he done that, then we would have automatically said, yeah, well, he didn't go through those formative years of 12 to the point where you're really tempted.
Yeah.
Where you're really, where you're learning about the world and the world's really after you.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to do it like we did.
Right.
And they're the years that really form what kind of a person you're going to be.
Oh, absolutely.
So although he could have done that, he says, no, I'm going to start him at the very beginning, just like you came out of the womb. He came out of the womb and experienced every year of a life that you experienced every year of your life.
Yeah.
And teenage years and early 20s and whatever.
And you know, had to learn obedience, the scriptures, you know, tell us and so forth. One of the things that I have done, you know, on several different occasions, especially as I've had opportunity to talk with teenagers and youth rallies and things like that, we talk about Jesus. And you know, one of the questions that I sometimes will pose to them in those occasions, we're talking about Jesus being man, is, you know, I ask them, I say, you think that Jesus ever had pimples? Yeah, that sounds like kind of a strange question, doesn't it? You know, but if you go back to and you think about the teenage years, you know, what's one of the biggest concerns that so many teenagers face and struggle with? You know, they wake up one morning, they got a pimple on the end of their nose, and their world has just come to an end. How am I going to go out and face my friends and everything with this pimple on the end of my nose, you know, or right here on the front of my face or whatever? You know, we look at things like that and go, oh, you know, but, you know, we have to understand Jesus, did he experience those kinds of things? You see? So that, you know, we talk to our teenagers all the time about, you know, being like Jesus, right? And doing, you know, what would Jesus do? Do what Jesus would do. Well, if they can't see Jesus as experiencing the things that they experience in their lives, how are they going to relate to him? You say. Another question I ask oftentimes is, do you think that Jesus at any point, you know, maybe in his early teen years, you know, was looking at his feet and going, I got the biggest feet in the world, you know, like oftentimes boys growing up will do, you know, their body is growing and changing and they look and they're going, my feet are too big for my body, you know, and all of those kinds of things, you know, that teenagers experience. You see, we typically, the reason those are important for even adults to think about is because I think for us, we typically like to, we read the Gospels and we go, okay, yeah, Jesus was born of a virgin, he was a baby, and then, you know, the next thing we read about was, you know, he's 12 years old, he's in the temple, you know, and he did that thing in the temple, and then he went with his parents and he was obedient, you know, and so forth. And then the next thing is he comes on the scene, he's 30 years old, and he begins his ministry. Okay? And we don't really make that much of a connection. In other words, that's a clean Jesus, if I can use that terminology. You understand what I mean by that? You know, that's kind of cleaning up the growing up years of Jesus. You see, we don't have to think about, you know, the Jesus growing up and looking at girls and going, wow, he's really cute, you know, and the whole experience that teenagers experience. You know, with those kinds of things. We typically don't think about Jesus in those ways, do we? You know, that how many times do you suppose that Jesus came home, you know, into the house and, you know, maybe he didn't wash his feet or wipe his feet before he walked in and Mary had to say, Jesus, get back out there and wash your feet before you come in the house. I just washed the floor. Which are typical things that parents do with their kids, right? Did Jesus ever go through those kinds of things? And I suggest to you, yes.
If he had though, he'd have some very jealous brothers.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, you know, James and John, you know, all of his sisters, they've all been looking at him going, you know, calling him all kinds of names because he was special, right? I think it's Terry Rush that talks about, you know, the whole idea of Jesus not having what he calls an honorary degree in humanity. In other words, Jesus didn't come here and just kind of hover above the earth about a foot off the ground. You see, and he never got his feet dirty and so forth. He came here and he lived just like we do. You see? And so, you know, when he's there in the carpenter shop and he's learning how to use hammers and nails and all those things, how many times do you think he ever hit his thumb with a hammer? You see? Yeah. He was tempted in every way just as we are. And I believe that includes his early years. Not just the temptation that we read about in the beginning of the Gospel of Luke, you see. I don't think that's all what the writer of Hebrews is talking about. In other words, limiting to that. He's talking about Jesus' experience in humanity. You see, and so we have to look at it and understand it that way. Colonel? Probably not.
You know, and if he wasn't, if he wasn't in the social scene, he probably wouldn't have been invited. You know, so people knew him and they hung out with Jesus. Yeah. You know, and he was a friend for a lot of people. That's why he was invited to the party. He wasn't some strange kid that was off in a corner, too holy to interact with anybody,
right,
because he's always about his father's business. I mean, that was a part of his life, as well as interacting and being with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was John the Baptist.
Yeah.
And he was the oddball.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
But really, I mean, you know, Scripture tells us that people around Christ, when he began his ministry, you know, is this the carpenter's son?
Yeah.
They knew who he was.
Exactly.
They'd already put him in his bucket.
Yeah. Okay. He ran around town. Everybody around town knew Jesus. You know, they knew his family. They knew his brothers and his sisters. And so forth, because he was a normal kid, just like everybody else, you know. You know, wonder if he ever tied any of his sister's hair in knots, you know, while they were sleeping or anything. You know what kids do. Again, these are the kinds of things that human beings do. You see? And the significance of this aspect of it is that we really need to grasp the humanity of Jesus if we're really going to be able to understand and grasp the significance of his death, his burial, and his resurrection. Without grasping his humanity, then those things are depreciated tremendously. So that's why that particular part is on here, that we've got to help people to see Jesus, you see, as a human being. Okay? And that's, I think, why there is considerable amount of time in the gospel spent on Jesus' birth and the preparations that were made for his actually coming into this world. Okay, we look at the ministry of Jesus, another part of this whole thing, and just again, you know, when you talk about the ministry of Jesus, that's a broad category, isn't it? There's a lot of things involved in the ministry of Jesus that would fit under that category. But again, I think that some of the main things that you want to be able to focus on in here have to do with the beginning of his ministry, how all of that, you know, came about with his, you know, baptism and then the temptations that he has. But I would suggest to you that perhaps one of the best places to go to focus on, I would say, some of the more significant aspects of Jesus' ministry is the Gospel of John. And you know, I'm very partial to the Gospel of John, but primarily because of the things that John focuses on in his gospel have to do with, as he says at the end of the gospel, which is the end of Jesus' ministry, okay, have to do with Jesus. John writes and says, many other things did Jesus in the presence of his disciples that are not recorded in this book. Okay? But these are written, why? So that you might believe in his name, and in believing you might have life. And so John's gospel is a great gospel for really focusing on those things that will help people and bring people to belief in who Jesus is. You know, there's, in terms of just general concepts of teaching about Jesus, of course you want to point out the fact that he told a lot of parables. It's the teaching aspect of Jesus. And then there are the miracles that Jesus performed. You want to, you know, focus on some of that. But again, I just suggest to you, focus on from John's gospel is a good place to kind of bring the teachings of Jesus, though the parables are not there, but the whole aspect of who Jesus really was and what his purpose was is just very significantly brought out in the gospel of John, you know, in there. So you know, you focus a little bit on that, and then the last aspect of this is the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. And in each of the different gospel accounts, you know, we find some different aspects of this whole part of Jesus' life and death are emphasized in different ways and so forth. You know, you have the crucifixion narratives that we find, especially within Matthew and Luke, that John doesn't really focus on, you know, a whole lot. Say, but then you have the garden narrative in John. You say, in terms of that, those teachings that Jesus shares with his disciples from the time they left, you know, the upper room after the washing of the feet to the time that they're in the garden. You have that whole aspect of from chapter 14 to chapter 17 of just some amazing teachings of Jesus, where he spends that last amount of time with his disciples. So each gospel account has its different focus on this particular aspect of Jesus in the end of his life. There are so many different stories and so many different, you know, aspects, and in a sense it's kind of like, you know, each one is viewing the death, burial, and resurrection from a little bit of a different perspective, looking onto it and sharing the significant things that the Spirit has given them to include in their narratives. But this aspect of it then takes, again, the humanity of Jesus that we see starting from the birth record of Jesus, and brings it all together and wraps it all up in the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus, and basically completes the story of God with us, who is Emmanuel. You see, how he came here, what he did, you know, in his ministry, but then the significance of it is how he died. Okay? So these are the basic things that, you know, when you're sharing with someone, you know, the Gospels, this is the skeletal material that you want to put together for someone. Okay? Any other thoughts or comments on that at all?
My image of Jesus, in a sense, is sort of like a person that's in that period of time in his life, in his teenage years, more or less, is someone of a more of a quiet type, stay to the self type. You don't associate with people that much, not because basically because of the fact of who he was and what he was about. As you said, he was about, he knew who he was, where he was born, where he came from, where
right.
he was going.
Mm-hmm.
He did some things probably that he did too, but he didn't associate with them probably as much because of what he was about and what he had to do.
Okay.
And that, in a sense, set him apart different as we Christians are set apart different from the world. You know, in some places, you stand out because of the fact that you're different.
Okay.
Because you don't do certain things that everybody else does. And everybody knows you. They see you.
Right.
Or they recognize you as soon as you walk in the room. But, you know, they probably, I mean, he was like, kind of saying, he was probably very social. You know, people knew him.
Yeah.
And he went, I mean, that's just my image. He was known in a lot of different places, but they still, people probably crossed the front of the eyes and back. Oh, yeah, you know that guy. He's like, you don't do nothing.
Yeah, he's a goody two-shoes.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, not so much as he, like you see, he covered above the ground, but he already stood out from little kids. And that's just, like I said, my image of him. And that set him apart. So it didn't surprise a lot of people when he did start his ministry and start being, of course, a lot of people still wouldn't accept him because of what he was saying.
Yeah.
You know, that was,
but they probably did look upon Jesus as, you know, he's growing up, he's getting, you know, the older, you know, in that going, yeah, I could see Jesus being a rabbi, you know, because of the kind of life that he was living, you know. But I think, you know, again, we go back and we look at Jesus as he's growing up, and you can't separate him from the other kids, you know, in his village that were, he was growing up with. And, you know, it's things like you look at Jesus and you're going, okay, you know, here's, you know, the kids from the neighborhood are all getting together and they're all sitting around talking, you know, what do y'all want to do today? Well, I don't know, what do you want to do? Oh, I don't know. Hey, I got an idea, let's go. And somebody comes up with an idea that's probably not what they need to do. You say, you know, that's what kids do, right? They're going, let's go down and, you know, tip over old man Stein's, you know, trash cans or something, you know, what have you. You know, just some kind of mischief to cause, what have you. Well, what's Jesus going to do in that situation? You see? Is Jesus going to say to them something like, guys, you know, y'all know you're not supposed to be doing that kind of stuff. I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm not going to go and participate in that. You guys shouldn't do that either. You know, I could see Jesus interacting with his friends in that kind of way. I can see Jesus as being a leader, having a lot of influence over the other kids, you know, his age, you know, in the village, in the town, and so forth, you know, that guys would come up with ideas like that, as kids will do, and Jesus would say, hey, guys, come on, let's not, you know, because Jesus is, you know, he's trying to live his life the way that he's supposed to be. You see? Right?
I'm going to go back for a minute. I'm sorry. I just mentioned how important genealogy is.
Okay.
Because it's so important, because you think about everybody in this room, when you know where we came from, we know where we came from, but who our family is.
Yeah.
How can we trace our family to?
Right.
And I found out something that I haven't gone to a family meeting. I had worked with guys at Brandon Lynn for years and had no idea that they were my cousin.
Okay.
Found that out after I went to a family reunion. With the fish back my great grandmother.
Okay.
Who had two sisters, who married two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And they, in turn, had children. And I just grinned all over myself when I found out. It's also good to teach people right.
Yeah. Yeah. You never know.
You just don't know.
Yeah.
But I've always tried to have an attitude that, you know, I kind of always try to get along with folks.
Right.
But it's very important to know who your family is. Your family tree is important.
Right.
You
Because now they got something there. You can go on some kind of internet, some kind of .com thing, you know.
Right.
And you can find everything.
Find all kinds of people.
Yeah, everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Computer aid that you live in. But it's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I see why God put it in the book.
Yeah. Genealogies are so vitally important. They really are. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, one of the other things that we have to understand and keep in mind is we've been, you know, talking all this time and putting this skeleton together. We look at the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. Okay? You know, that in so many ways finalizes or completes the picture, okay, of the promise that God made to Abraham, and even before that, the promise that God made back in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15, okay? But what we need to be able to do at this particular point when we're studying with someone with this is go back to some significant events that we've already looked at in the Old Testament and help them to be able to see how, again, these things are tied together with this. For instance, one of the primary events that is connected to the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus is what? The Passover. You see? And so again, you know, we want to help this person or people to be able to see and make this connection again, you know, to this and use this as the opportunity to go, okay, remember we talked about the Passover, you know, and all of the regulations concerning that it was to be what kind of a lamb? A lamb without spot or defect or any blemish or what have you. And then there was the, help me out here, the blood on the door, you see. There was the connection to the fact that the Israelites were in bondage in Egypt, and that blood is what allowed them to be freed from their bondage. And we make that connection to this particular point, you say, in the life of Jesus, because that's what He did for us. That's what He accomplished. Jesus, in that sense, is our Passover. You see, He is our Passover lamb. And so when we go back and we make those connections, you know, for people, you see, then again, it adds a tremendous amount of significance to the whole story of the Bible. You see, why did God include all that information about, you know, the Israelites in Egypt and, you know, and how they got out of there? Was it just, again, for filler? You know, so we'd have some historical, you know, idea about what they were experiencing. No, it was to help to understand the significance of the death and the burial and the resurrection of Jesus. You say. So we need to go back and make those kinds of connections for people and help them to be able to see these are significant aspects, in other words, of the skeleton that we're putting together. All right? Any other thoughts or comments? Are we out of time here? We're just about, aren't we? I see other people coming in here. Anybody else? Okay, let's go ahead and finish up here. And next week we're going to talk about, well, actually it'll be 2 weeks from now, because next week Eddie Hendricks is going to be teaching Bible class. So we'll pick up with this in 2 weeks, looking at the beginning of the church.